Alrighty. Hey everybody, welcome back to Jewel Radio. How you doing out there? Podcaster fans? What do you call a podcast fan? Just listeners. I guess, listeners of Jewel Radio, welcome back. A new show for you. We'll explain what's been going on with me. It's been a crazy, like, month and a half, I think, since I talked to you. It's September. We've had an election. We have a new president. Which I'm going to try to talk not all that much about that. But I did make some predictions, and I've said some things on this show about elections and who should be the president. We'll follow up. I'll tell you who I voted for, if you care about that. I'm joined today by a guy I've known for... How many years have I known you?
2.5, 3. Yeah,
get close to that mic there. Get
3 years?
Yeah, you can even pull it towards you if that's easier. Just pull the whole thing. Yeah, about 3 years probably, right? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Sam Silverstein's here. How you doing, Sam?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
Sam's a young comedian. When I say young, how old are you now?
Newly 20.
Newly 20. Oh, my God. See, that's a teenage Sam Silverstein, but I can't even say that now.
Uh-huh.
Because I met you, and you were... How old were you when I met you?
17 was when 17. I did my first show there.
Let me tell you how I met Sam. There was a show, and it was a... maybe you know better than me, but I'll just tell it as I know it and then correct me. There was a show that was a fundraiser for a charity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of Jewish charity? Was
yeah,
that what it was?
It was like a Jewish fundraiser.
Yeah.
I wasn't exactly sure what the deal was, but I got asked to open up for that guy.
Yeah, so we had a guy, this is at Mark Riley's Comedy Castle where I work, and the guy that they hired, I can't even remember his name, but he was a comic who like moved to Israel to become like a rabbi. And you saw a guy in the full, and you would know better than me, what do they call the full rabbi attire?
I mean, the whole Orthodox look.
Yeah, the Orthodox look. Big giant beard, the right. Black clothing, the whole thing. And he had some jokes. I mean, he was funny, but it was just very unusual. Like, they flew this guy in from Israel to do this fundraiser in Royal Oak, Michigan. And so that was unusual. So it made it weird. But we do a lot of fundraisers there, and you know, that's cool. But it was weird that usually, like, we'll pick the comic.
Right.
They go, okay, you guys pick the comic, and we get a guy like a Mike Green, a local guy, a Billy Ray Bauer, people know from this show. And, you know, we get those guys, and they do the thing. They're like, well, we got this guy from Israel. So, okay, guy from Israel, that's all right. And then they go, he's got an opening act. So, okay, who's the opening act? And they're like, well, there's a kid that's from high school.
It threw me too. That was my second performance.
Yeah, exactly. So they said, there's this kid he's from a high school and he's going to perform as well. I said, all right, you know, well, let's meet this guy. And then you show up and I'm talking to you and you said you performed once at what, the talent show?
Yeah, it was like a high school talent show. I performed once. A couple weeks later, I'm here. And
yeah.
Then,
and so you're playing in front of, I got to be 200-300 people at least.
Right. It was huge.
At this fundraiser in front of a rabbi of all fucking people. And so I'm like, all right, let's see what, you know, because like I'm always like, you know, anybody first time, and you know, I see this like Wednesday night open mic, you know, first time guys, they really never know what they're doing. And they're usually not very good, but you expect that they're not going to be good. It's their first mm-hmm. time, you know, but you know, if you see something in them, it's good. And you go, well, it's open mic. It's maybe 50 people, 75, 80 people at the most. So who cares? You just go down in flames. And I'm like, boy, this kid's going to go up in front of... And first, the other thing you got to know, and I know I told you this in comedy class, charity shows suck.
Mm-hmm.
They're hard crowds. Like, people that come to a charity function, they're not coming to laugh. Like, oh, it's Friday night, we want to laugh. Here it's
cause.
Like, yeah, it's Tuesday night or Wednesday night. They might have dropped... I'm guessing at that one, they probably dropped $50 a ticket. Some people probably pay
steep,
way
man.
More than that.
I don't know. I remember looking at it, and it was like... It might have even been three figures.
Well, you know what? Some people, they have, like, different tiers, and, like, if you give more money, you get a better seat at those. So, yeah, they pay big money to come to this. So they're not, like, there because they want to laugh and see a great show. They're there to raise money, and whoever's there,
mm-hmm.
you know, even when it's a great, like, even when we have a great lineup for a charity show, the shows are always tough, you know? So I'm like, well, here's this kid who's performed once.
You remember what I was wearing that night?
Yeah, you came back, like, wearing, like, basketball shorts yeah. or something.
Everyone's there, like, in suit and
yeah,
tie.
Yeah, right.
And like, you know, very Orthodox event. I'm just in basketball shorts.
But
gym
did
shoes.
You bring it? You brought a change of clothes though, right? or did
I don't
you
know.
Not,
I don't
did
know.
You go out on stage in basketball?
I went out
shorts?
On stage in basketball shorts. Yeah. I mean, not, granted, now if I'd have been in that situation, just you know, with more
you
experience,
would,
I
yeah,
could have made
know
a
what
joke
to do.
Of that. But I just did my whole thing,
and
as
you
if
know
I
what to do. So yeah, you came out and did. I don't know. I mean, I can't exactly remember what you did, but you tell people. How do you think it went? Your first
oh
show.
God awful.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I cried that night.
Oh, did yeah, you
I was,
really?
I was just so sad. It was like. I was so excited. My first show, it was, you know, in front of all my friends and family. It was
okay,
great.
Look, it was bad, and I knew it was going to be bad. Like I said, no one's going to be good their first time, especially good in front of that crowd. I mean, a great comic would have not had a great show in front of that crowd, mm-hmm. and you second time. But I think, you know, I definitely saw something in you, and I don't remember exactly what I said to you, but I probably said, hey, come do open mic sometime. I'd like to see you with, you know... some people, and you said, all right, and I think I saw you, I don't know how many weeks later.
It was soon after.
Yeah, it wasn't far,
and
I put you back on, and you were better, and you started doing shows. You started doing a lot of shows, right?
Yeah, tons. Yeah. Because I remember that night, too, I remember Jerry said something to me.
Yeah.
And I hated Jerry for the first few weeks.
Jerry, who also works at Comedy Castle.
Yeah, Jerry at Comedy Castle, and I love Jerry now. Jerry's great, but I remember that was like... He said something that it was just so real, like it's going to take you time to get there.
Yeah,
or something.
Right. Yeah,
that's
well,
not
which
it
does. Which
it does. Right. He was right. I mean,
but you kept doing shows, and I put you on open mic, and it was going well. And then I started teaching comedy class right around that, like probably not long after, less than a year after that. Right, I started teaching the advanced comedy class at Comedy Castle, and you said you wanted to take it, and you had been doing shows, and I said, boy, I see something in Sam where like. A little more coaching, and we'll get you to the hump, I think. Because, you know, the goal of the advanced comedy class, if anyone's listening to this that would consider taking it, young comics, people who want to, you know, find their way in the business, it's about learning how to be an MC, how to be a working comic, and you definitely needed that. You know,
oh,
you
yeah.
needed to learn
I mean,
those
that,
things.
That transitioned me almost from, like, open micer to kind of getting more into MCing.
Yeah.
And
that was the idea, so we had you do that, and you did well in the class. I know we worked on some material in there and got you some things. Some new ideas, you know, and then had you emceeing, and now you're working and doing shows, and you got your own things that we'll talk about, your own shows you promote, but I guess well, here's the one thing at comedy that's good advice for your comic or you want to do comedy that I think you learned in comedy class. And again, that was my first time really teaching the full class, and something that is I found with later students after you is that you have to see yourself through the eyes of the audience. I think that was real important for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, to look at you, at that time, you were 18 probably when you did the mm-hmm. class, and it was like, see yourself as an 18-year-old guy in front of this older crowd who paid a lot of money to watch comedy, and how do they see you? And write jokes that way.
Right, and trying to get it where it's like, my material as an 18-year-old can be relatable to, you know,
yeah,
a crowd
exactly.
of adults.
Right, like, what do 40-year-olds think an 18-year-old is like? And play into that. And play into that. I remember all that stuff, and you still do it about, you know, hanging out with your mom's friends and that.
Right.
I remember we coming up with that with you in class.
Yeah, definitely.
That
stuff I still use to this
yeah,
day. Like
and people love that. They just right. love it. They just eat that up when you do it. And it's so – and part of it is that, you know, you're really charismatic on stage. You have, like, a natural ability to be engaging in front of people, and a lot of people don't have that. And I don't even think I have it. You know, I think I've worked on it for, you know, 17 years that I've been doing stand-up, but – you know, you got it right out of the gate, which is so amazing. You know, it's just a gift that
you
have. And then when you pair that with like really good material, you're on your way to be successful. And I know you've been constantly working and doing your own shows. And then I think next year, right? Tell everybody what's going on with you next year.
June. I got to look specifically, but mid June I'll be hosting at Comedy Castle.
At Comedy Castle, finally got you in there.
Right. Finally, I've been emailing and waiting.
Well, there was a lot. I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. You know, Mark Ridley is always looking for new acts. He likes to give lots of new acts chances. You know, so probably in a calendar year. Between approximately, like, say, a dozen guys get a shot to go in for the first time and be an MC, okay? And there's always conversation because there's probably, you know, 50, 100 guys who would want that opportunity. And I think, you know, 2 years ago, so say going into 2016, you know, Mark and I, you know, he asked me my opinion. We'll sit down and go over names that have been through the open mic, been through the classes. And, you know, your name came up for 2016. And we were talking, and it was kind of like, Sam's almost, he's real close, and we're both talking, and he go, Sam's a young guy, he's not going anywhere, he's going to work on it, let's pass for 2016, we'll see him keep working and we'll look again 2017. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had you quit because you didn't get booked for a 2016 date, that would have been it for you.
Right.
You know, your name might have never come up. But you kept working. You kept doing open mics. You kept doing your own shows. And the next thing you know, it's 2017 comes around and Mark starts booking and your name comes up again. Well, boy, we waited a year. Last year passed on him. Now here we go. And there you are.
Now I'm headlining.
There it is. Well, that's the next step. That's another step. That's another step for you. But I think where you're at now, here's my advice to you. And again, you got that MC thing going. You got a nice, I've seen you do 7-8 minutes and kill with it. So start making it a little bit longer. Don't throw that 7-8 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
Add to it.
Right.
Till you got like that 15. Because when you MC Comedy Castle, you got to do 15 up front, you know? And there's situations where like a headliner's going long. And like you saw Dave Attell this weekend. That guy, Steve Sabo, who's been around for like 25 years, he did 10 minutes.
Because
mm-hmm. Attell does a longer set. So everybody gets cut back a little bit when it's that headliner. But it depends on the headliner, you know? So best case scenario, you're doing 15. So you got to have 15. So you need a few more minutes to pad that
right.
8 minutes, you know, and get that up to 10 minutes and get up to 15 minutes, you know. And I've told you this in class. I give this advice. You can do crowd work. You can do birthdays as the MC. You mm-hmm. can go around the room and do those kind of things. And that'll help pad that to get you out to 15.
Right.
And
it
can also bring
too.
People in. Yeah.
So
and if you're good at it, you know, there's times you shouldn't do crowd work, you know. I think when guys get, you know, 6 minutes or 7 minutes on open mic, you shouldn't be doing crowd work.
Right. It's too small.
Because you're there to just show yourself. But when you're the MC, because face it, people come in late, you know, they're still walking in. You know, that's a good time to talk to them about their birthday party or whatever.
Right. I like it, too, because it's like, especially MCing just an open mic where you're back and forth so much.
Yeah.
I've just always, when I'd watch MCs, I would hate when it would just be like, all right, now give it up for, you know, John Smith. Okay,
yeah.
Keep it going for John. I'll give it up for Sam. Keep it going for Sam. So I always try to, like, do little stuff where it's almost like the audience wants you to come back.
You know, and it's funny because I like to give that advice to guys. I always give advice to the MCs, like, in my comedy class. Like, when you're the MC, you don't want to do time in between the acts. You don't want to do sit up there and do material. You don't want to do jokes. But what you can do is if you want to be funny about the previous act or you want to be funny about the next act, then feel free. You know, that takes 10 seconds and you get a laugh and, you know, but don't go up there and think you're going to like do a bunch because you're going to bore the audience if you're up there doing time.
Right.
So when I have you host open mic or show, you're up there doing funny introductions about, you know, coming up next, my dad's here. And then some old black guy walks out, you know.
Like, I love that one.
Yeah, there's really,
I mean,
you do some
stupid
funny
shit like that.
Yeah, you do
lie,
that.
You know,
yeah.
It's easy.
And sometimes you have different outfits. You come out and you've changed into something.
Yeah, I've done some weird outfits too.
Yeah, you don't have to give them away because people might come see you.
Right.
And they'll see those. And that's really funny. And that's all perfectly safe to do as the MC. Like that, I encourage people to do that. And very few people do because they're nervous. Oh, boy, how do I come up with something on the fly for this guy? But you come up with a funny way to introduce somebody. You come up with, you know, whatever it might be. So if somebody did something weird in their act, you, mm-hmm. you say something about it, you know.
And what I'll do a lot, too, that I think this is honestly, like, I mean, I don't consider myself in a position to give anyone advice because I'm so new to comedy, but is that you can so easily write things that it's not like, oh, I got to come up with this on the spot, but you write a joke beforehand where it's like, I just need to find an older woman and this is going to come off as improv. I just need to find an older black guy and this is...
Or that's what happens. Eventually, when you watch guys that are like really good at crowd work, headliners, guys have been around for a while, you know, they've got the jokes about the married couple. So they look out, they find the married couple.
Right.
They find the old guy. They find the stoner. Then they got stoner jokes. They've got, you know, they've got jokes for all occasions.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who's sitting there, they got a joke about it. The girl with the big tits, they've got that joke, you know. And that's kind of how you get good at crowd work.
Right.
Is that, you know, you watch some of these guys and you go, oh my, you know, to an audience, they look at a guy and they go, man, this guy's making this all up on the spot. This guy's amazing. And then they'll realize every show has the same jokes depending upon who's sitting there. They've got a joke for this guy. They got a joke for that guy.
You got to point them out.
And if it's a comic that you're introing or outroing, while they're on stage for 6 or 7 minutes and you're back there waiting for them, listen to their act and write something funny about something they said in their act, a funny comeback.
Definitely.
Or something about if it's, like, say, you know, old black guy's coming out, or this is my dad, or, you know, an old lady comes out, and this is,
I'm gonna do
here's my new
so
girlfriend, and some old lady walks out, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know?
I'll do that till I die.
yeah.
That stuff doesn't get old.
And it's always really gay. Audiences love that. It makes you look like you're actually working at being the MC, and especially like MCing an open mic's way different than MCing a regular show, and that's something you're going to learn. I know you MC some regular shows too, but yeah, I mean, the open mics is probably the toughest thing you can MC because you got to be out there a lot. There's a lot of different intros, and there's a lot of keeping time, and, you know, some of those guys who've never done comedy, you know, they'll be next up, and they're not backstage. They're not ready to go. You got to run out and find them, and you know, so it's kind of a crazy thing to do, but when you do that, and you do that well, then you can do anything because that's the hardest thing you can do. So that's where you're at right now.
Right.
You know, you're at the point where the shows that you're doing is going to be the hardest. Because you're opening the show, or you're emceeing, and you have to introduce all these crazy people and keep
small crowds too. Sometimes.
Small crowds at open mic, yeah. When you start doing whatever you do, you know, June at Comedy Castle is not always sold out shows because it's summertime; it's a little slower in Michigan. But you know, you'll worst case scenario, you'll have 100.
Uh huh.
Saturday night, 8 o'clock. Yeah, we'll probably come close to selling out. So you have 300-400 in there, and that's easy. That's the other thing that's so cruel about comedy. And I know I say this in class too. It's like, playing to Saturday night sold out show at Comedy Castle, almost anyone can walk up there and get laughs.
Right.
You don't have to be good at all.
They want to laugh.
Yeah, they want to laugh. And people think it's the opposite. Boy, man, I'm not good enough to do Saturday night at Comedy Castle. And yeah, you're not good enough for us to give you that opportunity, for Mark Ridley to give you the opportunity to do Saturday night. But as far as walking up there and get laughs, that's the easiest show you're ever going to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to laugh.
And there's lots of them, too.
Yeah, and there's lots of people, and they're there to laugh. So what you're doing now, these are the hard shows. The open mics, the MC spots, those are the hard ones. When you get to be a feature act, and you're up there, and there's already been a guy up there that warmed them up for you, or even better sometimes, there's an MC up there that sucked, and he ate shit, and they're ready to laugh, and this guy's not funny, and then you go up and you're funny, shit, man, they'll think you're the king at that point.
Right.
So that's what you got to look forward to. So put in the work now, and you're one of the guys that's so impressive that I see that is doing that, you know? And another thing I talk about in comedy class, put your own shows together.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done a million things like that. Tell people about that real quick.
So we created this show called Laughter's the Cure, and it's a comedy show that kind of combines, because I'll go watch these headliners at Comedy Castle, and it's an hour set, and I love comedy. I could watch that all day.
Yeah, you're there a lot when you're not working. You're there watching
right,
headliners.
I just love watching it.
Yeah.
But to someone who doesn't necessarily love comedy, to watch somebody talk for an hour, as you know, they could be as funny as Dane Cook, Kevin Hart, whatever, that's tough to watch. You know, our generation, we're always on our phones. We're always doing something new. So we created this show that combines, it's got like 20 minutes of video. It's got like some music in it. It's got comedy, and it's all tied into a storyline. So we created this show to kind of like bring the best of what you might see at a movie, a theater show, a stand-up show, all into like one thing.
Yeah. And you do those and you raise money on those, right?
Yep.
Tell people who you raise money for. I think it's
impressive. We donate all of our money to CS Mott Children's Hospital in Ann Arbor.
Okay. That's pretty great.
Yeah,
that's a good function. That's a good charity to have.
Yeah, and just it's like to build our name and continue doing what we love. It was the best way where, you know, people want to come to the show because it's for a good cause. We get to benefit because all these people are coming to our show and then the hospital benefits
at
the end of the day.
Yeah. You got to make a little money for yourself on those.
Eventually.
You got to play some production costs.
Eventually.
You got to keep, I mean, that's fine. It's not like you're saying, you know, I mean, especially, you know, and eventually you'll get to a point where you're doing these charity shows and, you know, you start to hire comics and you might have to pay the comics, but you do the budget, you make that all work. You know, you can make those things work for you. Not just as a fundraiser, which is great, but also to make some money for the comics. And when you have that money, when you know that those things are going to, you're going to make a real nice charity donation, you take some of that money and you apply it, and that money that you're spending makes you more money.
Because
now you've got a real headliner that people know, and it can be that, you know. And there's shows here in town, you know, they do big fundraisers every year. I know, I think it's Motor City Casino does the Mitten Project or something, where they do like a coat drive and a mitten drive, and they have big comics coming in. Jay Leno, I think, does one of the food bank benefit that one of my friends is involved with. Big names, man.
Right. Because, I mean, we're hoping to get, like, a sponsor for it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They use corporate sponsors.
Yeah, that's what we need. If we can get a corporate
all
sponsor,
that stuff,
then, you know, we can continue to donate.
And you can start doing, you know, you start doing your raffles, your charity auctions, all that stuff. Man, you can really, I mean, and again, you know, not to be selfish about it, But, you know, doing your own shows, whether they be charity shows, whether they do your own fundraisers, that's a great way to make a name for yourself, to network yourself to other comics,
right,
and
huge,
people. And besides, I see Sam and you put together your own benefit, and if you're really good at it, and then somebody's throwing their other benefit that's not your charity. And they go, I need an MC for that. Who'd be good at that? Oh, I saw Sam Silverstein's thing. They call you, and they're going to pay you. Now you're over there doing that show, and you're getting paid.
Right.
So everybody benefits, man. It's a whole thing. It's a whole network.
And that's the idea, too, is that, like, if everybody, it's like kind of like a win-win-win. So there's no,
because
we're doing most of our shows on just different, like, college campuses.
Right, okay.
So it's like, you know, it's just nothing but fun. We'll get 500 kids in a room. Everybody's, you know, been drinking, having fun, and just they want to laugh. We want to make them laugh, and we all raise some money.
All right, man. Well, that's good. So Sam is doing all that, and is there anywhere people can find that out about? Is it somewhere they can go if they want
to
do one of these?
Laughteristhecure.com.
Okay.
That's got all of our stuff on there. Or you can, you know, go on YouTube, search Laughter is the Cure. We do videos every week. Go on Facebook, search Laughter is the Cure.
I saw you make, because you do video stuff too, right?
Yeah, a lot of video work.
Is that where you're going? Is that a career thing for you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I left school this year.
Yeah, okay.
So right now we're just kind of focusing on the shows and then the video business.
Yeah.
And one of my buddies I do the video work with is just incredible with all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we've been doing that right now just to make money while, you know, trying to live the dream.
And what kind of stuff would you do? Like, I know you do your own funny stuff, but like somebody wanted you to do a wedding or like,
yeah,
what
do
you
do?
Anything like
weddings,
that?
Weddings, bar mitzvahs, real estate videos, commercials. So it's funny where it's like, you know, we're getting hired by these, you know, big name companies to go do their video, and then we're going home and we're doing these weird,
short
sketches we do every
week.
Well,
that's kind of how it is. I mean, it's like the comedy. You know, you do the corporate things to pay your bills and you do your own shows that are fun.
And just more,
and that's
art
it's funding. It's funding your art,
exactly.
You know, they're commissioning these things. They're commissioning you to come in and do that kind of work. So that's good too, man.
It's fun. I mean, it's just, I love it. It's like if I could do video work and just tell jokes for the rest of my life. That's what it's
good.
All about.
Well, you know, when you bring those two worlds together, you're going to find a lot of opportunities. Both when like. Because if you need funny people to be in your videos, well, now you know all these comics, and you know there's going to be comics that are going to need. I need my show taped. I need, you know, a reel that I need a YouTube video I can send out. Well, if you guys can do that kind of stuff, then you make money that way, you know?
Exactly. And again, like you said, it's just meeting people and networking and nothing but fun.
Good, man. Well, Sam's an up-and-comer. I'm glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is sweet.
You were kind of my apprentice in a sense. I feel a very, what's the relationship? Not a fatherly, but like a, you know,
I would say that. Like
a
comedy,
master apprentice.
Like a comedy, cool
I'm your
uncle,
Jedi. Yeah,
Jedi,
I'm your Jedi.
Figure.
You're the Padawan learner to me. But that's the thing about you that I like, too, is that you're a good learner. You take advice well. And some students and like people I teach don't take advice well. I tell them, oh, do it this way, and then they don't do it that way. And they do it their way. And their way's okay. I think my way's better. But sometimes they just don't ever try it that way, you know? And I'm not saying I'm 100% right, because I tell people stuff is funny and they do it in front of people. And then, you know, because ultimately the audience is the judge.
Right.
But I have instincts after, you know, 17 years of doing it and watching everybody under the sun do comedy and, you know,
I
have pretty good instincts.
Anybody who's done something longer than you have, even if they're not right necessarily.
Yeah.
They know something that you don't.
Sure, yeah.
Especially, I mean, you take somebody like you, somebody like Jerry, I mean, all these guys who work at Comedy Castle, you're there seeing the best headliners every single weekend.
Exactly, yeah. You
so
learn
it's like
a lot.
To not learn a lot from watching. To not at least take that into consideration just has never really made sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. I mean, you know, although, you know, I'm pretty hard-headed about my own act, because there's a lot of time guys will come up and go, do it this way or do a tag this way, and I'm like, nah, I like doing it my way. Because sometimes I feel like, and it's, you know, I know you don't feel this way, and that's to your benefit, but, you know, my show is my show. I want every word that comes out of my mouth to be from me.
Right.
And sometimes that gets you, not in trouble, but it's like, yeah, maybe I should take advice. And I guess there's guys I will take advice from, and, you know, you're still learning. You know, you're always learning.
Right. You
even
gotta
this
pick and
many
choose.
Years later.
I mean,
you
with
know?
Comedy, everybody tries to.
Yeah.
There's one guy at Comedy Castle that he's seen me a few times. He's kind of like a big, I can't think of his name, big, like bald dude, always just like super drunk. And he comes up to me every time. He was always like intercepts.
Oh, like a guy in the audience.
Yeah, a guy in the audience.
I think I know the guy you're talking about.
Always gives me advice too. It's never good. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the audience gives you. That's the thing. You have to know who to take advice from.
Right.
You can't just be like the random guy in the audience because they're gonna go like, "Here's a joke I heard at work. You can use it." And then they're gonna tell you some joke that ends in the N word. You know,
it's like not good. Yeah. It was the night that I was hosting back and forth.
I think that guy's there all the time, and he's full of quote-unquote good advice.
Right. He is fun, though. So.
Yeah, he's trying.
Right. I smile, smile and nod at him.
You got to know who to take advice from. So, yeah, you know, your veteran comics, your guys you think are funny, take their advice. Don't take advice from the audience. As much as like listening to the audience is important to develop your act, you know, keep the jokes the audience laughs at, drop the ones that don't. Yeah, you can't just go, "Hey, you should do this. Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. I'll do that joke." No, you can't do that. So, well, I'm glad to have you here. You're a bright young man, and you're an up and comer. And I gotta have some new guys. I think this show, sometimes suffers from having my old buddies on it too much. You know, but you know, it's interesting to listen to guys who are veterans because they'll tell you good stories about the road. But I think it's good to listen to new guys, and I think it's the beginning of a youth movement on Joel Radio.
Exactly. I'm glad to start it.
As I get older, the guests will get younger. That's the idea. So anyway, let's move on with some other stuff. Speaking of my apprentice and the apprentice, Donald Trump got elected this past week, almost a week ago now, as we're talking. And, you know, I'm bored by politics. I've sat here and talked about this election and how, you know, people didn't have a good choice either way with either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And I've always said, you know, I don't care. You know, I used to be real political when I was about your age, man. I was a political science major at college. I used to go to rallies and help out on campaigns and do stuff. And as I've gotten older, I've decided that stuff's less important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my own life is important, and I'm working on that, you know. So I don't really have time to do all that. And I said, you know, I don't really care who you vote for. I don't care if you don't vote. I voted. When it came time to vote, I voted. Now, Michigan was supposed to go to Hillary Clinton. It was one of, I guess, four or five states that flipped and went to Donald Trump unexpectedly, which is why he won. I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I actually voted for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. Now, Gary Johnson's a guy. Again, I stand by what I said on this show.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter who the president is, and I don't care. And Donald Trump's president, and I'm not upset about it. Do I think he's qualified to be president? Not at all. I think he's a terrible choice. But I ultimately don't think that it matters that much to me on a day-to-day basis. Look, I don't think Donald Trump's going to get to the Oval Office and he's going to see a big red button in front of him and he's going to hit that and the nukes are going to go off. That's not going to happen. You know?
Right.
So those fears are unfounded. Did I really think Gary Johnson had a chance? No. But part of me, and I guess at the last minute, I said that, you know, if the Libertarian Party got 5% of the vote nationally, that the Libertarians would always be on the ballot. They wouldn't have to go out and campaign and get people to sign petitions to get on the ballot, which is what they have to do now. So if they got 5% in the general election, they'd be on every year. They could spend that effort on actually getting elected. And I think a third party would be a good thing. And I think the Libertarian Party would be a good party, because I agree with a lot of their, you know, they are for freedom.
Right.
And I've always said that I am for freedom.
It's just crazy too how much, like, I mean, just the past few months with the election, just how much hate there is.
Yeah,
but
I believe in freedom for everybody. If you want to spew hate speech, go for it. I'm for that. Mm-hmm. I'm not for hate speech. I don't approve of it, but I approve of your right to do it.
To express it.
And a lot of liberals, the people that claim that they are for freedom and equal rights for everybody, they don't believe in equal rights for Klan guys. You know, they don't believe in equal rights for those that speak out against America. And I believe in equal rights for those people. You know, I don't agree with what you're saying, but I will fight for your right to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know, there's so much political correctness and there's so much shouting down of that. You know, if you want to be pro-life, go for it. I don't agree with pro-life, but fuck it, man. Go for it. I agree that you should be able to give your opinion, you know, and there's just so much of, you know, I think the world would be a better place if we knew, you know, we're banned things, we ban words, we ban people, we fire them from jobs for having controversial opinions. I'm like, let's get that out in the open. Let's let people express that. Let's find out who the racists are and judge them accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't find out who those people are when you're going to ban their speech. That's right. Not a good way to do it.
It just kind of boils down to like, whatever you want to say or do is fine as long as that's not directly affecting someone else.
Well, look, you know, words never hurt anybody.
Right.
And I always say, I'm not offended by anything. There's nothing you can say to me that'll offend me. You know, if you say something against me personally, I can get upset. I reserve the right in that case. But no one can have an opinion that is going to offend me. Because I understand that people have opinions and they're stupid.
Right. Until it becomes physical, I think. And
Yeah. Well, physical is different. You know, but speech, free speech should be free, you know? So people that will try to shoot people down on Facebook for something, it's like, stop it. You're not, you know, no, and that's the other thing I think we've learned from this election. People put on Facebook every day stuff that's pro-Trump, stuff that's anti-Trump, blah, blah, blah. Guess whose opinion was changed by that? Nobody. Absolutely nobody.
Right.
Not one fucking person.
Right.
So none of that worked. You wasted your own goddamn time. I hear, see people on Facebook. I lost 200 friends on Facebook during the election. What's the goddamn point? Wouldn't you rather have the companionship and the friendship of 200 people that, yeah, maybe you don't know them all personally, like, and see them day to day, but wouldn't you want that? Wouldn't you want, okay, oh, you tried to convince, oh, Trump won and you feel good this day, but you had 200 people that could do something in your life productive and bring you happiness or joy or help you in a down time, and you turn them off. So you could have the billionaire get elected? Like, what the fuck is your problem?
Right. Facebook's been a madhouse, too, for the past
it's idiotic.
Months.
It's idiotic. And I haven't put up one political thing on Facebook and put up shit. Put up whatever you want. I don't give a fuck. And you know, I don't know that I've unfollowed people. Maybe I have. I can't remember. But, you know, just drop it. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Do something good in the world and put that up there.
Right. There's too much focus. I feel like it's just so much easier for people to, like, hate. Yeah. And put others down as opposed to...
I'm right, you're wrong.
Right. It's all I'm right, you're wrong. So just focusing on what you can do where it's like...
Yeah. Do something good.
It's just... Right, do something good. It separates us. It separates us as people.
Yeah. And look, I was shocked that Trump won. I really was. You know, I was watching... I was actually... I'll talk about this. I was doing a radio show at the time. So I'm watching... I was on from 11 to 1 on this radio show, and I'll plug that in a second. Watching, you know, we have five big bank of TVs in the studio, so we can watch the news and whatever. It's a news station, talk station. And we're, like, watching the results going, God, it looks like Trump's going to win. And everyone was all dumb. Everyone was all pissed off he's going to win. And it's like, yeah. But, yeah, because I predicted over a year ago on this show, remember we were talking about the new Star Wars that came out. It was one of those shows that we did probably back in, like, November, December last year. And I said, well, there's no way Hillary doesn't win the presidency. There's no way Hillary doesn't win.
There was probably an 86% chance or something.
And turns
crazy.
Out she didn't win, so I was wrong. But yeah, Trump, I mean, no one expected Trump to win the primary. You know, I do a thing on the show, Sam, called The Assholes of the Year. And at the end of every year, usually in December, I pick out the worst people of the year.
Who was the worst of
The asshole of last year was Jeb Bush.
Uh-huh.
Because I said Jeb Bush should be running away with this Republican race to be president. And he couldn't beat Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and these wackadoos. Wasn't Herman Cain this year. It was a Dr. Ben Carson, another maniac. And he couldn't put those guys in his rearview mirror with the Bush name. Because remember, the conspiracy guys? Oh, the Bushes were in the Saudis' pocket. They'll buy the election for the Bush. Not for Jeb.
No.
George, they
fuck
bought.
Jeb,
they
right.
bought everything for George, but Jeb
was the kid they did not
Jeb.
Like.
Nah. So all that stuff was bullshit, too. All that Michael Moore stuff about the Bushes being in the pocket and Bushes buy everything. That was all bullshit, too. But nobody bought Jeb anything. And so that's why Jeb was asshole of the year. So and I think I know who asshole of the year is going to be this year.
He's going to
be tied into the election. Well, you got your opportunity. You got your Trump. You got your Hillary for losing. You could say Hillary or you could say, you know. Billy Bush, another Bush.
I mean, I'm just, it's crazy.
For what he did.
That's
so, yeah.
Crazy that...
Did you vote this year, Sam?
Yeah,
you're a young man.
First year voting.
First year voting for the president. Do you want to tell people who you voted for?
Not for Trump.
No, all right.
I mean, again, I'm the same way. I'm not very into politics.
Okay.
You know, I'm just very consumed and busy with everything else going on right now that I wish I did know more about politics. But, you know, without getting too deep into it, I think that regardless of what Trump's plan or views may have been, I would personally never want to vote for someone with that kind of like character and attitude.
Yeah.
To lead
our
country.
He's definitely been a weird guy. Cause I mean, Trump really, you know, Trump is a real estate guy. Okay. That's kind of how he made his money, but he's way more famous for being, you know, a personality, like a media personality.
Right.
Guy who goes to interviews.
Well,
eventually got The Apprentice. Now, I've heard this rumor about Donald Trump, and I don't know if it's true at all, and there's no way to fact check it. But I heard, because Donald Trump's always said, hey, I'm a billionaire and I own all these buildings. And I think the buildings that he owns and has his name on and that he's built are worth a ton of money. I believe that's the case. Mm-hmm. But I believe that a lot of that is, you know, paper money. So when Trump says he's a billionaire, I believe he's a billionaire on paper. I believe that he owns things that are worth things. But does he have $1 billion in the bank? I don't think he does. And I think there's
Didn't he go bankrupt like four times or something like that?
I think he's declared bankruptcy at times, or his company declared bankruptcy, something like that. But I think there's guys like Mark Cuban who have $1 billion in the bank. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe that there are guys, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, you know, they have $1 billion in the bank or stocks. You know, they are liquid in a way that Donald Trump is not. So when Donald Trump says he's a billionaire, I don't really believe that that's completely true, because the rumor that I heard about Trump is the most money that Trump ever made for anything in his life was for The Apprentice television show.
I'm sure
that Trump, as the host and producer and whatever, was getting $1 million an episode or several million an episode. So he was pulling down, you know, $15, $20 million cash a year doing that show. And that was the most money that Trump was actually ever making cash in a year.
I saw a funny, it was a funny post. It was like, Trump's going to be the first president to move into the White House and be moving into a smaller house.
Well, that might be true. You know, he said, he did a 60 Minutes interview last night, and he said that he would not take the salary. The presidential salary is about $400,000 a year, that he would not take the salary. But he has to be paid as president. He can't be there and not accept salary. So he will accept $1 a year as president. So we'll see if he sticks.
So where does
that
money go to?
The 400 grand? Probably goes back into the budget, you know, the coffers, and can be spent on other things,
right.
I guess. But
on sponsoring, yeah. Laughter is the cure.
Well, that'd be good if he said, I'm going to take the 400, give it to charity. He could give it to Laughter is the Cure or whoever. But yeah, so we don't really know what Trump makes, and he still never released his tax forms, which is not required by law, but by tradition, anyone that's running for president releases their tax forms so they know that where their money's coming from, mm-hmm. and people can judge that. Trump never did, because he said, I'm being audited this year, and I'm not going to release my tax form. So we may never know what Trump really has.
I'm just hoping that, because you got to keep in mind, too, a lot of what you do running is just to get the vote. So it's who knows how much of what he said is going to necessarily be what he does. But
well, that's the other thing about the 60 Minutes interview. He seemed to backpedal on stuff. You know. They asked him, is he going to build a wall? He goes, well, we're going to build a wall. It might be a fence in some places, but we're going to build a wall. And are you going to deport millions of people? And he says, you know, there's 3 million illegals who've committed crimes, and the ones who have committed crimes will be gone, but we're not going to just go after all illegals. So he's kind of, you know, he's kind
we'll see,
of,
yeah.
He's softening a little bit, because, you know, he's not going to be the crazy guy that was running.
Right. I mean, maybe he was a genius and got, I mean, there was something like 1999 or something. If you look at his interviews, nothing he said then matched up with.
Yeah. No, he's
anything he's running with.
You know, he ran. I think Trump's a guy that did things to say that said things to get elected. And now he's elected, he's realizing that those things are going to be hard or impossible to implement. And so he's going to have to back off on those things.
Right.
And I think a lot of Trump's diehard supporters are going to lose faith in him, just like people lost faith in Obama. You know, Obama came in with all this, you know, hope and change, and then I'm going to end the war in Iraq, and I'm going to end this, and end Guantanamo Bay, and all these things, and we'll have racial harmony. And, you know, it's been 8 years of Obama. Do we have racial harmony? No.
Right.
Do we still have a war in Iraq? Yeah. Do we still have, you know, Guantanamo Bay? Yeah, we still have, you know, so it's very hard to do, you know, the people that vote sometimes get sold a bill of goods, and they, you know, they vote on what makes them feel good.
I think people are just they're waiting for a president to come in and things to change, but
yeah.
Like, in reality, I mean, as corny as it sounds, the change is going to come from us. It's
yeah.
Like, if we want to,
right.
If you want people to be equal and happy, like, the president's not going to come in and make that
you
happen.
Can't,
that
you can't sign something that make that happen. It's
right.
All we have to do in our daily lives, take those steps, and they're small steps, but they add up, and you'll look back and go, boy, remember 20 years ago when this, that, and the other thing, and gay people couldn't get married and all stuff? And they're small victories,
mm-hmm.
and they can happen on a daily basis if you work that way. And Trump didn't do that. So, I mean, Trump and Obama didn't do that. And Trump, you know, you can't, it's a gradual thing. Everybody calm down. That's my advice.
Uh-huh.
Take a chill pill, everybody. Smoke a legal joint if you can now in California and places that
Colorado, Michigan, some places.
Michigan, it is legal for, I mean, there's city ordinances. Like, I think it's decriminalized in Ferndale, where I live.
Yep.
But, it doesn't mean it's still illegal on a state level, so you can get in trouble that way. But, yeah, I mean, I think the states that were voting for legal recreational weed, they all voted for it, like Nevada, California.
Colorado.
I think Massachusetts. Well, Colorado has been, but it was just this past election. There were a bunch of states that had it. But Arizona rejected it. So if you live in Arizona, you're still...
So no moving to Arizona.
Yeah, no Arizona. Were you planning on moving to Arizona?
If I was, I'm not anymore.
You're not anymore. Fuck Arizona now. We're going to Nevada. Let's go to Vegas.
Exactly.
Imagine what the Vegas Strip's going to look like. Everyone's going to be high. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be a different scene.
A different scene in Vegas. All right, let's move on. So I know a lot of people were... my weight loss was a topic of conversation. A lot of it. You know, I started Penn Jillette's diet. Penn Jillette, the juggler, the tall guy from Penn and Teller, the very outspoken one.
Now I know you're talking about.
He wrote a book about his weight loss called Presto, How I Made Over 100 Pounds Magically Disappear. And I've been a fan of Penn and Teller, and especially enjoyed a TV show they did called Bullshit, which ran for years on Showtime. You can stream it now on Amazon and stuff. And, those guys are truth tellers. You know, a lot of magicians, when they go through their careers, because, magicians are about lying. And you juggle, and Penn's a juggler, so he's a guy you should be a fan of. But magicians are full of shit, you know?
Sorry,
they lie. That's their job. Their job is to fool you. Their job is to lie. But what a lot of magicians do is that in their acts, they're fooling you and they're lying to you. And Houdini did this, and Penn and Teller have done this, and Amazing Randy has done this, where they tell the truth about the real world. They go, look, the world is not what you think it is. We're fooling you every night. We've made a great living fooling you. But there's other people who are fooling you that aren't telling you they're fooling you. Magicians fool you, but they tell you they're going to fool you.
Right.
But when politicians do it, when people that come up with diets and alternative medicine all these things, and religious people come up with things and that lie to you, magicians like to expose those people sometimes. And Houdini did that back in his day, where he exposed the spiritualists. People were saying, "Well, we can speak to ghosts and we can talk to your dead relatives." And Houdini exposed those people and made that. I say he made that go away. There's a million people talking to ghosts in 2017 and 2016. So it didn't completely go away.
It's just scary.
But he did it, and Penn and Teller did their show Bullshit, where they did that. And James Randi has done that. If you saw the documentary An Honest Liar, I think that I called that Best Picture of last year. You see all of his history exposing fakes and charlatans. So when Penn Jillette decided he was going to take on dieting, I went like, okay, maybe that's something that'll actually work. Because you can find a million diets, eat this and you'll lose weight, and, eat grapefruit all day and you'll lose weight, and, or run 20 miles a day and you'll lose weight, or do this exercise, you'll lose weight. And so, I was a guy who's always been a little heavy,
All right, you look good now.
Thank you.
It's working,
and,
whatever that is.
But, so I decided that Penn Jillette lost over 100 pounds on his diet, and I said, maybe I'll try that.
What kind of stuff does he do?
Well, the tenets of Penn's diet, and look, Penn did not actually come up with the diet. He wrote the book.
Right.
He's following the tenets of a couple different people. There's a NASA engineer named Ray Cronise, who's a PhD, who in addition to doing NASA engineering, is interested in the field of weight loss, and he does a lot of fasting, and he does a lot of experiments on himself where he doesn't eat for 28 days and stuff. And there's a doctor named Joel Fuhrman who writes a lot of books about dieting. And you can look up Joel Fuhrman's books. There's a lot of those that are published as well. And he tells you what to eat and, this kind of thing. He has a thing called the Nutritarian Diet. So you've heard about vegetarians. And he's what's called a Nutritarian. That's the term that they came up with. Basically, you eat whole foods. Meaning fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds.
Meat.
No meat.
No meat.
Yeah, no meat. So no animal products at all. You also eat very, very minimal or no sugar, salt, or oil in your diet. And when I say whole foods, it means you do not process those foods beyond cooking them, baking them. You cook them or bake them whole, meaning baked potatoes, not mashed potatoes. You eat whole fruits as much as you want. You don't drink orange juice. You don't do fruit smoothies. Those things are processed. When you put a bunch of fruits in a blender and you blend it, that is, you know, in a way that's pre-digesting your food. So when you eat the whole food, your body has to digest it. When you drink a fruit smoothie, that's already digested. It's already been chopped up.
What's like your go-to meal right now?
Well, I'll explain. I eat fruit for breakfast. So today I ate a banana. I ate a clementine, which is kind of a little tiny seedless orange thing. And I add some pineapple. I had some raw pineapple chunks that I cut off of a... I have a big core of pineapple that I buy at the store, and I chop a hunk off, and I eat that. And that was breakfast. For dinner, I usually have some combination of a baked potato. The baked potato, you're supposed to eat the whole baked potato, including the skin. Sometimes I don't eat the skin, but you eat the baked potato. You don't put any salt on it or butter, because again, that's sugar, salt, oil. You don't want to add those things. You have a salad, which, you know, the salad that I buy is just a bagged salad. That is, I think it's carrots, romaine lettuce, and red cabbage. You don't put any salad dressing on the salad. You can put vinegar on. I don't like the taste of vinegar. I will add to my salad to give it a little flavor and a little juice. I add raisins, and I'll add sliced almonds. So salad with the raisins, almonds. Ears of corn I'm living on. So I go and buy ears of corn. You buy it in the, what do you call that? The husk.
Yeah.
And you shuck it, and you boil it in a pot of water for 10 minutes, and you eat that. Again, no butter, no salt on your corn.
How long ago did you start the...
Well, I'll get to that, too. And then you'll eat almonds, peanuts without salt. So I have peanuts in the shell, no salt. And I pop popcorn in an air popper. Brown rice is good. You know, you eat brown rice. I actually have started eating rice-a-roni, which is kind of white rice with a little bit of chicken flavoring in there. It's a little bit of a cheat, but... The brown rice is tough to eat, especially if you're on the road,
man.
That's
about as innocent of a cheat.
Yeah, it's an innocent cheat. And also, I take a little bit of butter-flavored cooking oil, and I spray the popcorn. So that's a little bit of a cheat. Little tiny cheat, you know?
The smallest cheat you can get.
But I started this in August, and I did 90 days. That's all you eat for 90 days. You cut out everything. You do the you know, the fruits, vegetables, whole grains, you know, nuts and seeds. And you do that for 90 days. And my 90 days ended about 11 days ago. And once you do that, and the other tenet of it is no exercise. So no exercise for 90 days. You can take walks. Because what happens, there's two reasons. One is that exercise, and again, reading the books and reading some of the Furman stuff online and Pendulette's book, you don't have the energy. You know, you're sort of, until your body gets into the, you know, getting used to your new metabolism on the diet, you don't have the energy. So if you lifted weights, went to the gym, you would be you would work up an appetite. So that's part of it. And the other one is when you lift weights or you do really strenuous exercise, your muscles swell up, you retain fluid because of the strain you're putting on it, and you don't actually lose weight. And the goal of this, you want to lose weight every single day. So in the 90 days that I started this, and I was strict, I had one sheet. And I think I said last time, I had clam chowder when I was in Boston. I went on that road trip. I know you listened to that show. I went to Boston. And I said, I'm going to have clam chowder in Boston. That's Boston's food. It'll be a little reward. I was about halfway through my 90 days. So again, I had clam chowder in Boston.
Very innocent.
Innocent. A couple clam chowder. Oh, and then my buddy came and met me, and he was, I want to have clam chowder. So I had clam chowder 2 days. Right. I had clam chowder with him, too. But so I lost 58 pounds in 90 days.
It's crazy.
Now, in the beginning, I was losing about 10 pounds a week. I was just cut out everything. Now, remember, I was eating on my regular diet. I was eating milk with my breakfast. Two slices of whole wheat bread with Jif peanut butter on it and two glasses of whole milk. That was my breakfast. Then I was for dinner. I was probably eating something from fast food, McDonald's, Burger King, maybe pizza. Then I was eating. I'd get out of work, you know, after Comedy Castle, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, having another meal. So I was consuming 3,000 calories a day, easy. On this diet with what I eat, because I did the math on all that stuff, because, you know, baked potato, 100 calories, ear of corn, 100 calories, you know. I'm eating less than 1,000 a day. I'm used to it now. So I went from, you know, so I was losing about 10 pounds a week in the beginning. That has started to slow down. So, you know, 20 pounds the first week, 5 pounds the next week, got down 58 pounds. And now I go back. You know, you can have an occasional walk. That's your exercise, is a walk. So I go out, take 40-minute walk a day, do it on the phone. The phone keeps your steps. You know, like, I don't even have, like, the Fitbit or anything.
Just pop some headphones in and go.
Yeah. My phone, a Samsung app on the Samsung phone that counts your steps. If you can get 6,000 a day, that's good. You're burning calories.
Samsung pay you for that little plug
no,
right there?
No, well, it came on my phone. You can download any kind of app you want. But, yeah, Samsung's got a thing. And it also, you know, I weigh myself. I bought a scale to weigh myself. I type in my weight. You watch the line. You know, it tracks it day to day. You watch it go down. So it's great. And so that was an exercise they did. But now that the 90 days is up, I have a rare and appropriate meal. Pen kind of goes with 90% of your food is on the diet. So 90% is the food that I ate for that 90 days, the whole fruits and vegetables, all that stuff. Every 10 days, I get to eat whatever I want. So the first day, day 91, I had done the 90 days. I went out, had Buddy's Pizza, the Detroit tradition, the deep dish crust.
See, that's a real person cheating.
Exactly. So I had the Buddy's Pizza for lunch, invited a couple of comedy buddies. Billy Ray Bauer, Bill Hildebrand came out with me and my family, my Aunt Rose, and dad and stepmom. We all went out, had Buddy's Pizza, had a basket of chicken fingers as the chicken tenders as the appetizer.
So you were living that night.
Ate everything. Got home, had a chocolate bar that I had bought a few days earlier at the store. I said, I'm going to eat some chocolate. I had a big old hazelnut chocolate bar, a real nice one, you know, $4 chocolate bar. Ate that and didn't eat for the rest of the day. That was my rare and appropriate meal. Boom, boom, boom. 9 days go by. Yesterday, day 10, get to eat another meal.
What'd you have yesterday?
Well, I started out, had fruit for breakfast. I had my healthy breakfast. Then I was watching football in the afternoon. See that bag of puffy Cheetos right in front of you there?
The one that
I had bought those.
Gone.
Yeah, that's it. Ate that all in one sitting.
Uh-huh.
I left the rest for you. So I ate those cheesy puffy Cheetos. Then for dinner, I went to a place called Nello's on Woodward. You know where Nello's is up there? Yeah, it's great.
No, not a lot of people are big fans of that. It's all it's like old people there. Yeah. And I love it.
I love it. You go in there, you eat. It's no worries.
It's
laid back. It's fat. Great food. So I went to Nello's. They have a thing called their, I think it's the Jumbo Burger. 2 half-pound beef patties. 3 buns. I had that fucking whole thing. A whole pound burger.
Put it down.
Fries. Had a cup of chicken soup.
They probably thought you had
crackers
in
there.
Days.
You know what? It's funny. I know a lot of the, because I'm in there. My dad loves Nello's. He's an old guy, right?
Uh-huh.
So we go, when he comes and we have lunch, we go to Nello's, you know? But I know a lot of the waitresses, and I haven't been in there in 90 days, really. You know, mm-hmm. They would have noticed it. But the Sunday crew was a different crew. They didn't really write. He's lost a lot of weight. He hasn't been here.
Right.
You know? But I ate that whole thing. I went to work. There was lots of like leftover Halloween candy. Had some Halloween candy. Went to a movie afterwards. Had another chocolate bar for a movie. One of those giant chocolates.
You
like.
Took advantage of those cheat days.
Yesterday, man, I ate too much yesterday. My stomach hurt a little bit yesterday.
You went from guilty about white rice brown rice to.
But you know what, man? That's my day. And now I'm going to have 10 days on the diet. I had my healthy fruit for breakfast, like I told you. I haven't eaten anything else today. When we're done with this, I'll start cooking my dinner. Maybe I'll make some popcorn as a treat.
What's the goal?
And here's the other thing. In 10 more days, you know what 10 days is? Thanksgiving.
Yep.
I'm going to eat my ass off on Thanksgiving,
that's
man.
Beautiful timing,
so, yeah, it's great. It's great. So that's what I'm doing, man.
What's the goal? What do you want?
Okay, now I'm down since 58, 90 days, another 10 days. I'm down another 5, so I'm down 63 pounds. I weigh 180 right now. I started 243. I weigh 180. I weigh less than I did when I graduated from high school.
Which is great.
You know, I went and saw my doctor about like 3-4 weeks ago. I'm off my high blood pressure medication that I was on. My blood pressure is completely normal, healthy weight for person. My resting heart rate went from about 90 beats per minute. It's down about 48, 50 beats a minute now. You know, the goal is to just keep losing weight. If you do the BMI index, if you go online and Google that, and my little app does it too, it says, you know, you type in your height, your weight, and it tells you you're overweight, you know. I was obese, 243 for my weight, obese. And it's kind of known for being bullshit because almost everybody's considered overweight on this thing. I went from being obese to being overweight. So
that's nice.
That's a change.
Right, that's
I'm not obese anymore.
Right.
I'm all overweight. But in I think when I hit 164, if I make it to that, it's only 16 pounds. That's probably 8 weeks from now, I will be considered normal weight for my height. According to the BMI. So that's kind
of
the goal.
Right. You lose that now, you lose that.
Thank you, man. So I'm trying. I've lost over 4 inches in my waist. I had to buy all new pants in this 90 days. Bought all new jeans. This is an XL t-shirt. I can wear a large t-shirt now.
Now that's a pajama shirt.
Yeah, I know. I got this. I bought a new hoodie. That's a size large. You know, new work shirts, 2 inches less in the collar. My sport coats that I wear, because it's funny, Comedy Castle, I wear a sport coat a lot of times. And people see me and they're like, whose sport coat is that? It's giant on you. So I found a tailor. I'm going over to him tomorrow. Going to have the sports coat altered and get right, those
we'll,
cut
we'll be
down.
Sharing closer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You and I will be the same
you'll
size.
You'll call me. You gotta, but, if you could just run a blazer up to Comedy Castle.
Exactly,
real quick.
Yeah. Sam and I, man. We'll be sharing. But here's the thing. Think about this, Sam. You're 20, man. If I told you when you were 44 you'd weigh exactly what you weigh today, you'd be pretty happy, wouldn't you?
I want to pack on a little more muscle.
Yeah, you
then,
pack on a little more muscle, but you know what I mean? Right. That's, you know, that's pretty amazing. And I never
absolutely.
Thought, you know, I mean, I think about it this way. And this is if you're thinking about doing a diet and you want to reach out to me, I'll help anyone, you know. Look, I've told you how to do it. I told Red Pen's book, and it is a simple diet. It's not complicated, but it's not easy, you know.
Right, you're not killing yourself over it.
Yeah, it's not easy to do. I do get hungry. You know, there's times late at night, maybe I have a box of raisins. I've been living on raisins, man. You look behind you, there's all kind of raisins up there, man. Oh. Raisins up there, you know. And I eat these little boxes of raisins. Yeah, you have that. Those raisins.
Right.
Those are about 100 calories
each. You got a raisin factory.
I buy a little box of raisins. If I want to have something, you know, because the other thing, another tenet of the diet is the window that you eat. And, you know, Penn likes to keep that to, you know, less than 8 hours a day, meaning your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner, your snacks, whatever, they're all in 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you eat at, if I eat breakfast, because I have nowhere to go in the morning, I'm a night owl, right? So if I eat breakfast at 10, 11, you get 8 hours, you eat your dinner at 6, that's your 8 hours. And you don't eat anything else. So between 6 p.m. and 10 a.m., I don't eat anything.
Some of us tough.
And your body is constant, and your body is constantly burning calories that way. But see, you're young. You're young. You're thin. I don't know how much you weigh, but you look like you know, no one would ever say you're overweight, you know? Like,
except the BMI.
The BMI might say, you want to do your BMI real quick? Let's do your BMI. What's your height, Sam?
Like 5'8".
5'8"? Let's go 5'6".
Depends who's asking.
All right, well, okay, we'll do a 5'8". I'm 5'8". That's what I'm saying. BMI chart. Let's see. Images. Calculate your BMI. All right, we're going to say you're 5'8". 5 foot. You can just Google this. You'll find it. I'm on a site called Smart BMI Calculator. And how much you weigh, you think? I got a scale in there, too, if you don't know.
I think I'm like 160 right now.
160, okay. You're 160. You're a male that's 20 years old. Are you Asian or Asian American?
Not to my knowledge.
Not that we know
Maybe
of.
Maybe somewhere distant.
Grandma might have went crazy one night, but it might have been
a wild night. And
some railroad worker might have fucked somebody down the line.
1/16th Asian.
All right, let's calculate. Sam. Boom. You, okay, what does this say? English. Body mass index. Your BMI is 39. Okay. It is ideal. What the fuck does this, where is your thing? Your SBMI, this is the weirdest thing I've ever, this is not a good chart. You are considered. Oh, your BMI is calculated at 24.3.
What's that mean?
I don't even. By class, you are normal weight. Sam Silverstein
okay,
is normal weight. There's a lot of stuff on here.
I can clap with this cast.
Well, like I said, for me, 5'8", I think it's 164.
Right.
Because that's my goal weight is 164. So, yeah, if you go over 164, you're overweight. Mm-hmm. You can gain 4 pounds.
So I got to ask you right there.
There you go. Stop right now. Stop eating. Go on the diet.
I'm
well,
done.
Now you know how to lose weight. If you gain weight, I've just told you how to lose weight. So there you go. So yeah, you're normal weight. That's what I want to be. I want to look like you. That's my goal.
We'll be sharing.
Be 20.
We'll be sharing clothes.
Yeah, they'll be
sharing
they'll be
clothes,
like
sharing women.
They'll be
whatever.
Like, is that Sam or Joel? I can't tell because you know they always confuse me with Corey Hall. You know the guy who usually does the show. Like, oh, they can't tell us apart, and it's like. Yeah, I want to be confused, but Corey's a big
I'll
fat
grow
guy.
My
I
want to
be. I want to be. Yeah, yeah. Get you some glasses.
Yeah, give me glasses.
Yeah,
I'll grow my beard
that'd
out.
Be great, man. That would be great. So, anyway, that's what's going on with weight loss, man. I'm very proud. Feel good. I'm eating
definitely.
Good.
You look great.
Thanks, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. Because yeah, you know, I was 240 when I taught you when we mm-hmm. met. You know, I was a big fat guy. So,
and that's what's cool too is it's like obviously you know I'm sure that the 3 month and 90 day period wasn't easy.
No,
but it's the kind of thing where it's like. You set your mind to something.
Yeah, and you do it.
My biggest thing, too, that I always, like, preach, sort of, is that time is going to fly, like, no matter what. So it's, like, whether you're doing something progressive or just doing nothing, that time's going to fly. And, like, 90 days would have still been 90 days.
90 days. And if you want, I haven't done all the math. I've kind of done a little bit in my head. But, man, I've gained weight since I graduated high school. And that was 26 years ago. And so I erased 26 years of weight gain in 100 days.
Did you go to high school around here?
I went to Chippewa Valley on the east side. Okay, so not Clinton too far. Township. Clinton Township, yeah. What high school did you go to?
I went to Berkeley. Berkeley. So like 5 minutes.
Corey went to Berkeley. Corey Hall, yeah. So there you go. Two Berkeley guys. So yeah, that's the weight loss thing, and I'm sticking on it. And again, if anyone wants help with it, I want to give, you know, let me know. Shout out to two people, and I should really put this on Facebook. I really want to, you know what I really need to do is take new photos. Because I have like old headshots and even like Facebook photos where I'm just fat, man. I'm just like, I got to get some new ones.
It's like catfish, but like in a better way.
Yeah, well, I want to get like, and even like maybe get a dating profile, right. Get some good pictures for that. And
I'll come do some video for you.
Yeah, I got a nice camera too. You can take pictures of me. So anyway, I want to thank a couple people that have helped me that have been on this show or are fans of the show. My ex-girlfriend, Heather Kozlikowski, who was on here, you know, Heather, doing a completely different plan in her life, lost over 85 pounds.
Wow.
And that was, you know, we were dating and she was at her heaviest, you know, and she was losing weight and then we broke up and then she lost a ton of weight after we broke up. And now that
we're
friends.
So the trick is just, if you want to lose weight, just date Joel for a few months, break
and then
up with
nah,
them.
She's done a great job and we talk every day, me and Heather. And so I'm very proud of her and she was encouragement. She was one of the first people I told when I started doing it. Because part of the thing when you start doing this diet is Penn tells you, don't tell anybody. Just do it, you know. And I'll tell you, after on day 5 of this diet that I started, day 5 of, you know, I just was eating good, somebody came up to me. It was actually Mary, you know Mary, the general manager of Comedy Camp. Yep. She came up to me. She goes, what are you doing to lose weight? You look good. After 5 days of being on the diet, like, she was the first. I didn't say anything to anybody. She goes, what are you doing? So she was the first person to notice. But, yeah, so, yeah, you're not supposed to tell anybody. And the first person I told when I actually said, you know, what I was doing and how I was doing it was Heather. You know, I said, Heather, I'm doing this, and I know you did something else, and I know that worked for you. I'm not exactly doing that, but I'm doing this, and I hope it works. And
that's cool.
You know,
that
so
you
she
found,
was somebody.
You found something that works for you.
Yeah, and then
too.
The other guy I want to thank is Superfan Cam. Cam's a guy that lives, I talk about Cam a lot on this show, but Cam's a guy that lives in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories. It is a city above the Arctic Circle. He works in a diamond mine, this guy Cam, but he's a super fan. He's been listening to the show for years and years and years, and Cam lost, I don't want to say how much weight Cam lost because I don't know exactly, but he's lost, I believe, over 100 pounds, and he's a big, tall guy, too. He had a lot of weight to lose because he's, I think, 6'4", 6'5". Oh, wow. So he's a big, tall guy, a lot of weight to lose. He's running, like, marathons now, jeez. This guy. And look, I ain't fucking running marathons. Exercise is bullshit.
Trying to get a new dating profile.
Exercise is bullshit. And I'm going, you know, look, and I've even not gone to my gym. I told my gym, I said, I'm not coming for 3 months, gave up my gym membership. You know, I'll start going back. And I've done a little bit of weightlifting. I have some dumbbells and stuff at the house and some power bands, and I've done that. But I don't believe that weightlifting and that is anything I'm going to do again at full time. I already, just by losing fat, I've got way more muscle. I've lost muscle. Sure, people always go, you're going to lose muscle. You're not eating protein. But you can fucking see my muscles now. Uh-huh. You can see that I've got a little bit of definition.
Back.
Yeah,
right, they're coming
but
back.
They're smaller than they were, but you can fucking see them because there's not fat on them now, you know? So, but I want to thank Cam because Cam and I had a lot of Facebook chats when he found out he'd listen to the show and
where's
hear about
he
it. Yellowknife.
Where is that?
It's you ever see the show Ice Road Truckers where the guys drive across the thing?
I don't think so.
It's a reality show. That's Yellowknife. You look it up. It's above the Arctic Circle. It's in the northernest part of Canada.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
that's
crazy.
Sweet.
So it's like Eskimo shit.
That's your number
there.
One fan right
there? He's a big fan of the show, and he's a friend. We chat on Facebook. And
that's awesome.
When he found out about weight loss, he hit me up and told me his story and what he did and what he did. He was very encouraging, and so I want to thank Cam. He's a great guy, and he's very much encouraging to me. So anyway, a couple things, then we're getting to our movies and TV shows. Oh, the radio thing. I want to plug my radio gig. 9:10 a.m. in Detroit. It's sort of the... It is the African. It is called the Voice of Detroit. That's their slogan. It is the African American talk station here in Detroit, and I am the sidekick every Tuesday with Mike Bonner. If you guys know Mike Bonner,
you walked into the wrong studio one day, and it clicked.
I was invited by Mike. Mike Bonner's a guy who is. I'm going to say he is in the very, very, very best comedians from Detroit that has ever come out. And he's still here, and he still does shows. He does a show every the last Friday of every month at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. He does Uptown Friday Night. You ever see Uptown Friday Night?
I see
with
the flyers for it all the time.
Yeah. If you ever, it's a cool show because it's completely different than the normal shows because it's urban, and these guys are really funny. Mike brings in guys from Chicago and all over. But Mike is one of the funniest guys, and he has this show. It's on 5 nights a week on 9:10 a.m. from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. But if you listen on Tuesdays, I'm on there every week sitting in, and it's funny because sometimes I'm there, like election night, we were there.
Yeah, I saw you post about it.
It was like, you know, four black guys, the producers are black, the engineers are black, and then one white guy, and they're all looking at me like, Trump's going to win. They're like, sorry, Joel, but Trump's going to, you know, they were all like, no, I don't vote for Trump, and I'm in there going on that, you know, but I'm the voice of the white people on that show. It's funny. Yeah, it's a funny show. We just talk wise and always got, you know, is a bunch of other comics that come on there, guys like Martez Jackson, Heather J. Henderson's been on there with me. A bunch of funny people come on.
So Mike Bonner's living in the area now.
Yeah, he lives here in Detroit, and but he's on there every Tuesday, every weeknight from 11 to 1, and if you tune in Tuesdays, you can listen to me on that. And if you don't live in Detroit because it's on the radio, just listen on the internet. There's a live stream on the 910 AM Superstation website. There's a cam in the studio. You can see me in there.
That's cool.
So I know I haven't been doing the show, but for the last, you know, 6-8 weeks, I've been on his show every Tuesday. So you can catch me there every Tuesday.
You're leaving your viewers behind.
No. I'm
Joel
Radio's,
found a new crew.
No. Joel Radio is going strong, man.
He's got some new friends.
And I think that's why he picked me, because he knew I did a lot of radio. You know, he knew I did a podcast for a long time. So Mike picked me, and I'm having a great time in there with Mike. So this night's the name. Nowadays, a lot of times it's you know, there'll be an interview with a black playwright that I'm sitting there. So it's not like this show where I'm leading the conversation. They turn to me and ask my opinion on things. Or they'll talk about growing up in the city, and I'll talk about growing up in the suburbs. And it's kind of like that, you know?
Right. It's cool.
So it's a little different. It's a little different for me. But I'm having a great time doing it. I love Mike, and he's a good friend as well. So, 9:10 a.m. every Tuesday, so that you can listen to me on that. So,
awesome.
Well, let's get into some TV stuff, some movie stuff. You want to do TV first? You watching anything on TV? Let's start with you. What are your shows, man?
I just got done watching The Office.
Oh, the American Office,
yeah,
the whole thing?
I love it.
American Office, good. One of the great shows ever, man.
So I'm so busy all the time. That, like, I'm constantly, like, you know, trying to plan new shows,
yeah,
write new material,
right.
This and that. It's hard for me to, like, get into, like, a serious
series.
Well,
you know, the thing is, your generation doesn't watch TV because you grew up with the internet.
Oh, everyone,
you
know, online. Everyone's on Netflix.
Yeah, because we, you know, we grew up, that was our entertainment. We didn't have the internet. You know, we watched television. Every night we sat down. We came home from, you know, well, we did. We come home from school, and our parents put us in front of the television and gave us a snack. So we would watch Leave It to Beaver, all the reruns, the old shows, you know, Gilligan's Island, Brady Bunch, old shows, and then cartoons, all that shit. And now, you know, so people my age, we're used to watching TV. You guys stream stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So you watch The Office. You didn't watch it when it was on. You watch it later. Yeah.
All on Netflix. Yeah.
Good, man. Office is great.
But I love stupid. I mean,
funny
shows
show.
Like that, I think, are like, and like all those like stupid cartoons. Like, I love Rick and Morty.
And
Family Guy, Bob's Burgers. I mean.
Yeah. Do you know that Mark Ridley's son, Ryan, who's a guy I started out doing comedy with, he is the executive producer of the Rick and Morty show?
No way.
Yeah, Ryan, man. He's a big shot. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he does that. I mean, he didn't create the show. Dan Harmon and his partner created it. But they knew Ryan because Ryan was doing sketch comedy for Dan and on some shows. And Ryan's now one of the top guys over there, Rick and Morty. So if you ever get a chance and you're talking, having a conversation with Mark, let him know you like Rick and Morty, because Mark's like to hear that his son did well, because his son was like this combo.
Combo.
Yeah, I just go like, hey, Mark, man, you know.
I saw this great joke on Rick and Morty.
You ever see Rick and Morty, Mark? It's great. And he'll go, Rick and Morty, my son. My son's the executive producer
of Rick
and Morty.
You gotta be shitting me.
Yeah, Ryan's a great guy. He does Rick and Morty. So yeah, all those shows are good.
I think those shows are genius. I think people that watch them, like, close mind are like, oh, this is stupid. But when you really watch it, it's so intelligent.
Well, I grew up, you know, my big show when I was like your age was The Simpsons. It had just come on. And that was like, they hired every great comedy writer to write that show. And that was the show. The Office kind of was the next one of those where they just a comedy show where just every great writer is on it. And The Office is that. And you see all those guys that came out of The Office, Mindy Kaling, BJ Novak, the guys behind the scenes, Larry Wilmore was on that show writing. Michael Ian Black did stuff on that show. All these guys, behind the scenes guys, the cast, that it was the show of its time, where so much comedy has grown out of The Office.
Right.
Craig Robinson, all those guys, you know. And even just like, just look at the credits and look at written by this, and you're like, oh, fuck, I didn't know he wrote on the show. And it's like just famous guys. And then the guy who, what's the guy's name? He went on to create Parks and Recreation. From that show,
I've never gotten into
that. That's your next thing. That show is off the air. That's all streaming. All those guys, you know, Aziz Ansari, Chris Pratt,
Amy Poehler,
all those guys, Rashida Jones. They all became famous on that show and all those writers. That's your next thing to watch. Watch Parks and Rec. Because it's created by one of the Office guys, and it's got the same, it feels like the Office in a way, you know?
Similar setup.
Similar setup, similar style, fake documentary kind of thing. So that's your next thing to watch. Watch Parks and Rec.
I saw the first one. I haven't gotten like too crazy into it yet.
No, it gets, you know, it took a couple seasons, and The Office took a couple seasons. The Office didn't really get good till like season two, you know? Mm-hmm. And Parks and Rec is like that. It gets better as it goes on, so it's really good. But yeah, good. And I'm watching, here's some stuff. The big thing now is Westworld on HBO, man. That is great. They did a great job with Westworld. I never saw the old movie. It was a movie from the 70s that Michael Crichton wrote, who wrote Jurassic Park and The Andromeda Strain and some of these movies. But Westworld on HBO is great. It's really good sci-fi. Basically, they've created the Old West. And you can go to the Old West as a tourist. If that's what you want to do. In the near future, you will be able to go, kind of like, you know, in Jurassic Park, they go to Jurassic Park, they meet dinosaurs. Well, here you go to the Old West, and it's the Old West. It's a town, you go in there, you can fuck hookers, you can get in gunfights, do all the Old West stuff. Rock, or, you know, you can be a criminal, you can be a sheriff, you can do whatever you want in the Old West. But, boy, the sci-fi element is that the Old West people aren't real, they're robots. And that's kind of the thing. So you have humans and robots that look exactly like humans interacting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of like the robots. I don't want to ruin it for you because they're 8 episodes in. It's great. The robots start to become aware maybe this isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. Westworld on HBO. Watch it. Evan Rachel Wood is one of the kind of the robot people. Ed Harris plays the villain. Anthony Hopkins is kind of the guy who, he's kind of like the old guy in Jurassic Park who created the whole thing. That's Anthony Hopkins from Silence of the Lambs. Jeffrey Wright is on that. He's one of the scientists. If you want to get a guy to be a scientist, get Jeffrey Wright. You know who
that's
Jeffrey Wright is?
No,
he's kind of like, he's an older black guy now, but he wears like those glasses down on his nose, and he's kind of that guy.
Is that the scientist?
And he's like, he was the scientist in The Martian. If you've ever seen The Martian.
I've seen part of that.
Yeah, where he's the guy that's like, he's the guy back at NASA who comes up with the ideas to get him home.
Mm-hmm.
The black guy, that Jeffrey Wright, who plays a good scientist.
He's
got the look. He's typecast. So Westworld, watch that. That's the next great HBO series, I think. Speaking of HBO series, Vice Principals just ended. You ever see any of his stuff? Danny McBride? Eastbound and Down.
Work, yeah.
And his movies. He's in a lot of funny movies, too.
And This is the End.
Pineapple Express he's in.
Yep. A lot of Seth Rogen movies.
Yeah. But if you watch Eastbound and Down, and the new one is Vice Principals, where he plays a vice principal at his high school.
And that's on HBO?
It's on HBO.
So I don't have,
dude, you can get somebody's password. You can get stream it.
Stream it, exactly.
Stream it. Vice Principals was fucking great. Oh, my God. It was so funny. I liked Eastbound and Down, where he played this like racist old baseball retired pitcher guy. Like a real redneck.
What's it called? Vice Principals?
Vice Principals,
put that in my notes.
Vice Principals.
They just got done.
Yeah, it just got done like a month ago or so. It was like kind of a summer series. But Vice Principals was fucking amazing, and I don't even want to ruin it. But it's like, you know how Danny McBride's thing is like, he's hardcore. He will go places most comedians won't go, most shows won't go. Because, you know, he's got a rival. He's the vice principal. The principal has to leave. They hire a new principal. And he wanted to be the principal, so he hates the new principal, who's like an old black lady.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these kind of Southern Bumpkins guy, this other guy, Walton Goggins, who you might know. He was in The Hateful Eight, the Tarantino movie, and a couple other things. And so those guys go to war with this old black lady from the North in this like Southern high school. And it's just fucking ridiculous, man. Yeah. It's wild.
I gotta check it out.
It's sex, there's drugs, it's fucking crazy. It's a great show. The ending was amazing. I was like, holy fucking shit.
How many seasons did they do?
One. I think it's 8 episodes or 10 episodes.
They just killed it in one season.
It's a half hour. It's fucking funny,
man.
See,
I think this shit's
cool.
I feel like you could do, there's so many ideas that don't need to be like 5 seasons.
Well, that's the thing, yeah.
But it's just too much
great
content.
Well, I think, you know, it's one of those that like, I think there's going to be another season because people like Vice Principals, you know. But there'll probably be 3 or 4, and that's all they'll make, if they even do that. But, Vice Principals was great. Watch that. It was so good, man.
I don't
so
know
good.
Why more things don't. I feel like you could. Like, some ideas are just too good for one movie.
Yeah, and just
and
make
you
a series.
Yeah,
that's
just,
what it is. Well, that's the next thing I'm going to talk about here. It's something on Amazon Video. If you have Amazon Video, you can stream this. It's called Crisis in 6 Scenes. It is the Woody Allen series. So, I've been a big Woody Allen fan for years. You ever see old Woody Allen movies?
Mm-mm.
Dude, they're funny. You got to watch old Woody Allen movies, man. He was like, my hero coming up in comedy was Woody Allen.
There's a lot. Stand up.
You're a young guy. You got lots of time to watch his stuff. When I was your age, man, I was watching all that old stuff from the 60s and 70s, you know, and 80s. Woody Allen, some of the funniest movies ever. You see stuff like Everything You Ever Want to Know About Sex, Bananas, Love and Death, Annie Hall, Manhattan. Those are fucking great movies. Well, he had a series out. Amazon paid him a bunch of movie to do like a 6-episode thing. So it's basically like a 3-hour movie, but it's 6 episodes. It's called Crisis in 6 Scenes. And Woody's like 80 now, so it's kind of like...
Is this new, what they just shot?
Yeah, it's brand new. It's brand new. It's on Amazon. He's the star of it with a woman named Elaine May, who is one of the great playwrights of all time in a team called Nichols and May. But Elaine May's like 80. She doesn't act a lot, but she's his wife in this. And then like Miley Cyrus is plays the young girl that they befriend in this. And
I love Miley Cyrus.
It's pretty good. Look, if you've seen any of Woody Allen's recent movies, because the recent movies, famously, he makes a movie every year. The new Woody Allen movies, some of them are funny, some of them are more serious. The quality is not what it used to be. So if you want to get into Woody Allen, watch the movies from the 70s and the 80s, okay? The new one's not as great. But if you're a Woody Allen fan, I think you'll enjoy it. You see some cameos, like guys have small scenes, like Lewis Black, the great comedian, is in this for a minute. Bobby Slayton, who's a guy I've opened for and I'm friendly with. Bobby Slayton's got a little role in this. So you see some guys pop in. It's kind of a weird... It's actually a period movie. It actually takes place in, like, I think the early 70s. It's supposed to be period. I didn't even realize it was period till it was, like, halfway through the first episode, because it's hard to tell because it's just a bunch of old guys, right? You know? Like, you see... But, yeah, it's pretty... You know what? It's an interesting experiment. I don't think it's successful as, like, you know, some of the new series like Vice Principals, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
Did it only come out on Amazon? Or
yeah, it's on Amazon as a video. It's an original series on Amazon.
Okay.
They're making those now.
Amazon's so if
you have
everything.
Yeah, if you have like a Roku or you have a PlayStation or whatever, or it's like even your TV's got the app for Amazon, you can pay $100 a year for Amazon, and they give you free shipping all year on your packages, and you get the video. Or you can pay five bucks a month for the video or something like that.
Amazon.
And they have a bunch of original
Amazon's
series.
Amazon's taking
on there.
Over.
Amazon's making their own shows, yeah, and they're great. So usually the ones that I've seen. So that's new, Crisis in 6 Scenes. And you know, when they put up like an Amazon series or even a Hulu series, I think now, or you saw something like Stranger Things on Netflix, they just put them all up at once. So you don't have to wait every week for them, mm-hmm. You know? So
Netflix is starting to do their own original series too.
Yeah, that's what, that's what Stranger Things was. And I watched the series Love, which was pretty funny, I thought. I ended up finishing that recently, which is Judd Apatow. See, Judd Apatow is the top guy now.
Right.
Judd Apatow is what Woody Allen used to be. You know, he is the top guy in comedy. And if you
What's
ever get
the one you were talking Love, it's called?
Love, yeah. It's just called Love. It's on Netflix.
I'm going to add that.
To yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a funny show. It's kind of like if you ever seen Girls on HBO, it's kind of a West Coast Girls, but it's about a girl and a guy. And the guy's like real nerdy, and the girl's like kind of this hipster who's got a drinking problem, and they kind of find each other, but they date other people, and they're not quite getting together. So it's good. It's
cool.
It's good. It's for people. The characters are a little bit older than you; they're like late 20s, early 30s, but they're still single, and you know their friends are getting married. They're kind of misfits. You know, it's a little bit. It's something you might appreciate in a few years.
Right.
But Judd Apatow produced it. And Judd, of course, is, you know, one of the top guys in comedy. If you ever get, you know, Judd is making all those great movies. And
he made Trainwreck, which
Trainwreck
David
for Amy
in,
Schumer and David Tell and all those guys.
Him.
And and he made a movie called The 5-Year Engagement. You know anybody in The 5-Year Engagement?
I haven't seen it. I know about it, but I haven't
seen
it.
Well, when you see The 5-Year Engagement, you will see a much heavier Joel Fragamenti.
Really?
As the guy who ate the stale donuts.
Okay. I did not know that you were in that.
It is the one movie, because I did a lot of extra work and stuff, and I've told a story. My fans are facepalming right now because I've told this a million times. But they pulled me out of the extras, the director, a guy named Nick Stoller, who made Get Him to the Greek and Forgetting Sarah Marshall, a bunch of funny movies. The Neighbors movies are his movies.
Yeah.
He was the director, and he looked at me and goes, hey, man, you want to do a little spot in this movie? We got some for you to do.
Where were you at?
We were at University of Michigan. We were shooting this. It's a psychological study. Here's who the actors were in the scene I did. Because I don't say anything. I'm the guy who eats the stale donuts. I don't want to ruin it.
You can clearly see it.
I got a close up, man. I went to the theater to see myself.
Back to my
55.
Notes.
Yeah, that won't watch. 5-Year Engagement. I've got it. I've got it on my shelf. I can loan it to you if you want to see it.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. 5-Year Engagement. And
That's crazy. So yeah. I remember, like, I have a faint memory of posing something about, like,
but
the guiding donuts.
I was the guy who would steal donuts. Here's who's in that movie. I mean, even in the scene I'm in, who's here's in it? Mindy Kaling from The Office. Emily Blunt was the star. You know, Emily Blunt, big movie star, Girl on the Train, Oscar nominated last year for Sicario. Emily Blunt. I forget the name of the Asian guy who was in The Interview, was in a lot of the, you know, Judd Apatow produced the movie.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart was in that movie, a small role. Brian Posehn was in that movie, small part. Chris Pratt, the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, Jurassic World, he was in that. I wasn't in the scene with him. Jason Segel, he was the star. It was Jason Segel and Emily Blunt from How I Met Your Mother was the star of that. It was like this all-star cast
movie.
Where
did they shoot that?
They shot a lot of it in Michigan.
So,
you know, in Ann Arbor.
To, like, meet these people?
I didn't, you know, when you say you met people on the movie set, you don't really, you know, there's kind of etiquette on the movie set where you don't really talk to them.
Yeah.
But I sat in a room this far away from Emily Blunt for about, as close as you and I are, I was this close to Emily Blunt for about 14 hours.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And Mindy Kaling. And Mindy Kaling was in the catering line with me. And Brian Posehn. And Kevin Hart wasn't famous. Like, she was fine. Everyone was cool.
Mindy seemed so cool.
I met Brian Posehn later. I did some comedy shows with Brian Posehn later, and I met him and said, oh, man, I was on 5-year engagement with you. I was in the same scene with you. Because you don't really talk to people on the set that much. You know,
right.
Like when I did the movie Real Steel with Hugh Jackman, I was an extra in that. A guy I know, Tori Adkins, who's a comic, had a speaking role in that. So I was talking to Tori on the set one day, and Hugh Jackman walked up because him and Tori had a scene together. And I go, hey, Hugh, hey, Tori, hey, Hugh. And I shook Hugh's hand and said hello to him. So that was cool. So in that case, I met Hugh Jackman.
Right, so Hugh came up and introduced himself to you. Cool.
Yeah, Hugh was like, here. I was having a conversation that Hugh walked up into.
Is that
so
the
I
guy that was eating the donuts?
Yeah, no, that was a different movie. So, yeah, so I met, and I told Brian Posehn, I go, yeah, I'm the guy who ate stale donuts. And it's funny, the stale donuts, and I didn't know it at the time, is the key to the whole movie. It's the whole theme that runs through the movie is stale donuts. I don't want to ruin it for you, but yeah. So I was honored to be in a, I can say I'm in a Judd Apatow movie.
Right.
With Kevin Hart and Chris Pratt.
And they they were with you.
Who are the two biggest movie stars in Hollywood right now? Kevin Hart and Chris Pratt, and I'm in a movie with them.
They're in a movie with you.
They're in a movie with me. All right, it's a 5-year engagement. I know, I'm boring my audience. Speaking of movie, because they've heard this story 100 times, but Sam didn't know this
right.
about me.
Sorry, everybody.
All right. The movie that's out now, here's the hot movie that I went to last night. Remember when I said I ate a chocolate bar at the movies after my big hamburger and stuff? The Arrival, the new sci-fi movie with Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, and Forest Whitaker.
Is that in theaters now?
It's in theaters right now. It opened this weekend. It was one of the big movies. It was got nothing but rave reviews, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. I like science fiction.
I
got to
go back to my notes.
I know. Yeah, I'm giving you that. That's why people listen to the show. They want to find out what to watch, right?
The Arrival.
The Arrival with Amy Adams. It came out this week, so I win. I'm a big sci-fi fan. And, you know, basically a bunch of alien ships show up, different cities all over the world. What are they here for? Well, they speak a language that we can't understand. They're not speaking English. So they have to find Amy Adams, who's a college professor, who like teaches languages. She's a linguist. You know, she speaks a million language. And the military finds her and says, you need to figure out what language these people are speaking and communicate with them. Because we don't know if they're here to hurt us, if they're here to help us. We don't know what's going on. And that's the setup for the movie. So...
Cool.
And it goes from there. I don't want to ruin anything else because there's a big twist in it and a whole bunch of things. But I like The Arrival. I'm recommending it. Was it the greatest sci-fi movie I've ever seen? Nah. You know, I liked things like, you know, like if you ever see District 9 where aliens come to Earth, that's a fucking great movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Arrival was good. I enjoyed it.
Are you a fan of that one?
What's that?
iRobot?
Yeah, iRobot was okay. I never saw all of iRobot.
I love iRobot.
But there's a lot of good. There's a lot of good modern science fiction. Gravity was great. The Martian was really good. District 9 was really good. The movie Monsters was really good, which the guy made. The guy who directed Godzilla and directed Star Wars Rogue One that's coming out. That guy, I forget his name. He directed this movie called Monsters. That was his first thing. That's really good. Cloverfield was great. I'll talk about the sequel to Cloverfield in a second. I saw that. So a lot of good sci-fi recently. To me, The Arrival is more Interstellar, which was not as great.
Still haven't. I got to see
that. Yeah, Interstellar was all right. But not, it was more Interstellar than Gravity. It wasn't quite as good as those. But I still recommend it. If you like sci-fi and you want to see a good movie, you know, and Amy Adams is the lead. She's a great actress. She might get nominated again for this. So I can recommend The Arrival. I'll tell you to see that. Go to the theater. If you're going to the theater now, you want to see something, go see The Arrival. That's my recommendation to
you. Can you imagine if an alien came to the world right now? we have no business being here. You guys are going to kill yourselves eventually.
I know. That's what it looks like, doesn't it?
Right. We're not going to waste our fucking time. We'll come back in a year. And
we're going to kill each other over if Donald Trump grabbing pussies. You know? Right. We're going to kill each other over dumb shit.
Come back in a year and we'll
dumb shit. All right. Now, here's some stuff to rent. I'll give you some things to rent and then we'll get out of here. Here's something you can rent. Oh, The Neon Demon. Here's a weird movie. It was a guy named Nicholas Wilding Refn. He directed a movie named Drive that you might have seen. Came out a few years ago with Ryan Gosling. That was really cool. And he's kind of this real stylish director. It's about a model who comes to L.A. So, and bad things happen to her. I'm just going to leave it at that. So, nothing but hot chicks in this movie. Ellie Fanning is the lead in this, and she's the young girl comes to be that. She befriends a girl named Jenna Malone, who's another hot actress. Bella Heathcote, who I've talked about on this show as maybe the best-looking woman you will ever see, is Bella. You know what Bella Heathcote looks like?
I got to get back, back in my notes, or you got me?
You got me? I got you on Bella Heathcote. Right, I'm going to tell you about Bella Heathcote in this movie.
I'm starting to think you're not watching these movies for the movie.
Well, this one is something I will recommend for other reasons. Okay, here's images of Bella Heathcote. Let's start there. Let's start that one. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, I can see that. That's,
Bella Heathcote.
That's the one for you right
that's
there?
That's the one. You can stop. I said this on the show. You can stop making women now. You've made Bella Heathcote. Well, she's one of the rival. You know, I say like this girl goes to L.A. and she meets like mean models. This is one of them, Bella Heathcote. So there you go. Yeah, she meets Bella Heathcote. Here you go. Bella Heathcote naked in the Neon Demon. There you go.
All right.
Yeah, that's why you got. Yeah. I know you can't
my
apply.
Cast class.
Sam's
my,
got a broken hand
got
today.
A broken hand, so,
Bella Heathcote naked, and it's streaming right now if you have Amazon Prime. You can watch it.
Generally, I would applaud at the naked woman, but
you get to see this girl in a shower with another hot chick. There's a shower scene, her and another hot chick, naked.
This is on Pornhub.com?
This is on Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime, that has the Woody Allen series, also has the Neon Demon free for streaming. So watch Neon Demon. It's a pretty cool movie. I'm not saying it's the greatest thing. It's kind of got like a weird, scary kind of twist to it, because like, you know, she's living in this like shitty hotel, and like Keanu Reeves owns the hotel, and he's kind of a dirtbag, and these models are kind of mean to her, and it's not really supposed to be realistic. It's more like, and it's very stylish. It's a beautiful movie to watch. So
what was that one called again?
Neon Demon.
Neon Demon.
Demon. Bella Heathcote naked. That's what it should
Bella
be called.
Bella Heathcote naked.
Bella Heathcote naked. That's what it should be called. All right, let's move on to another thing that you can stream right now. I rented this for $5 on Amazon called Life Animated. Life Animated is a documentary about a kid named Owen Suskind. And Owen Suskind is a kid, it's his life story of Owen Suskind, who has autism. And Owen, at the age of about 1 year, was a normal kid. Then he hit 1 year and started acting differently, and his parents didn't know why. Turns out he had autism. And he was speaking, and at a certain point, he could no longer speak. And his parents describe his journey about, well, he talked in like this gibberish, and he was still functional in a lot of ways, but his language wasn't there. And then one night, he was watching his Disney movies, and his dad walked into the room, and he was reciting dialogue from a Disney movie. And the dad goes, oh, man. He's doing Disney movies, and he was doing Aladdin, and he goes, wow, I didn't know the kid could talk any English, but he can recite these Disney movies. So he grabs a puppet of the parrot. I forget what the parrot's name in the thing is. I'm kind of ruining the movie. I'm going to shut up in a second. And he grabs the parrot, and he goes over with the parrot puppet, and he starts talking to his son as the parrot, which was Gilbert Gottfried, which is important later. And so he does doing Gilbert Gottfried's voice as the parrot.
Right.
And the kid starts talking back to his dad. And this kid, for years, couldn't talk to his dad, and now he can speak to his dad as Disney characters.
Wow.
It's a documentary.
Oh, so that's all
It's a documentary.
Real?
It's a real story, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
And it goes on from there, but I'm telling you, I was bawling during this, Sam. So emotional to hear this father. And what happens with this kid, and we'll go into it more, is that he uses Disney to rehabilitate his speech and tries to live a normal life as an autistic man. And it's a whole documentary about that. It follows his life for all these years. It's really great. It's emotional.
So they just had actors reenacting it?
No, what it is, it's reenacted a lot of it through animation.
That's why
it's called Life Animated.
Gotcha.
So they did like kind of this Disney style animation of him as a kid and his dad talking to him. And then you see his dad interviewed and you see the kid in modern day and he's trying to like find a job and live
Life
on his own
animated.
And it's great.
Fuck,
Life Animated, man.
Should have brought a pen and paper.
No, well you can listen back. You can listen back to the show and you'll
Life
hear all
animated,
these.
Definitely.
Look, I'll give you. You know what, Sam? I got my notes right here. I'll hand you those and you can take that.
Hell yeah, thank you.
Life Animated. It's so good. You'll love it. You'll cry. It's I love documentaries. Now, you think about making documentaries with your team there.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm all about that. I've just been kind of looking for the right.
It's a good documentary. It'll inspire you. Life
right,
Animated. Very
right
good. Very good. It's an inspirational story, too. I loved it. And, little spoiler, Gilbert Gottfried shows up at one point in the movie itself.
In animated form?
No, as himself.
Okay.
He goes and meets the kid, which is cool.
Right.
You know, that's great. And Gilbert's a guy I've opened for.
The real kid.
He meets the real kid. Yeah,
okay,
he meets
cool.
the kid. Yeah,
that's
in real
cool.
life. So it's great. Life Animated. Go watch that. Another thing you can stream, which came out this summer, I didn't see it, and a lot of people I think missed it, was a movie called The Nice Guys, directed by a guy named Shane Black. Now Shane Black made a great movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, with Robert Downey Jr. and I think in Val Kilmer. And this was when no one would hire Robert Downey Jr. because he was like a crackhead or he was drinking or whatever. But he put him in this movie, great movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and then he used that as a springboard to become Iron Man and all these great stuff. So Kiss Kiss Bang Bang's great. But this movie, Nice Guys, came out this summer. You can rent it now. Shane Black, he also wrote the Lethal Weapon movies, but it's a cop buddy movie. It's like a cop and a detective, and it's Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, and it's like the Lethal Weapon style, quarreling cop buddies, you know?
Have you seen
and it's an action movie, and it's
the
great.
Other guys? I feel like that sounds
yeah, it's
like...
kind of like that. I haven't seen The Other Guys, but it's kind of like that. But it's I think it's a little tad more serious than that, mm-hmm. but it is funny. It's kind of like an 80s style cop buddy action movie. Russell Crowe's great. Ryan Gosling's great. You can rent that, too. I think that was a movie that a lot of people didn't see. It kind of snuck under the radar, but it's got big action scenes, a lot of comedy. It takes place in L.A. You see a lot of L.A., which is cool. So watch Nice Guys. I talked about good sci-fi. 10 Cloverfield Lane came out this year, another 2016 movie. It's the sequel to Cloverfield. You ever see Cloverfield? It's like Cloverfield was a movie where they found a video camera in after a catastrophic event. And they go back and watch it, and what it is like Godzilla invaded. And these kids were having a party one night, and you see the cam, their like video camera.
Cloverfield.
Yeah, it's a Cloverfield.
Back
this is
the
sequel. I know. I've got notes for you. I'll give you the notes. But Cloverfield is the sequel, although it's more of a spiritual sequel than a sequel. This movie is not found footage like Blair Witch Project. It's not like we found a camera and this is the movie. It's an actual story about a girl and she's driving. She broke up with her boyfriend. There's a car accident. She ends up in a bunker. And the guy who owns the bunker says, the world has ended. I found you on the side of the road after your accident. I'm going to keep you alive in this bunker. And that guy's played by John Goodman. And she doesn't know if she should trust John Goodman or if John Goodman's going to kill her
keep
or
her
rape
captive
her.
Keep her captive.
Right. So basically, she was in an accident. She's being held captive. She was told the world is ending, and she doesn't know who to trust. So you get this kind of real tense... It's almost like Room that came out last year, Room was a good movie. It's kind of like that, but it's got a little sci-fi twist to it, which I'm not going to ruin, but it was really good. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in that, who I'm real hot for, as well as...
Mm-hmm.
I know I said you could Bella Heathcote, but...
Right, you don't want...
No, listen.
She hears you.
Bella Heathcote is the girl... Bella Heathcote's the girl you look at. Mary Elizabeth Winstead's the one you actually date.
Yeah.
She's hot, too, but she seems cool.
Oh, Bella's still on the screen. She can hear you.
You want Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Yeah, let's see.
You want some Mary Elizabeth photos? Let me get you some...
let's see.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, also very hot, but not... Maybe less hot, but also very, very good looking. But Mary Elizabeth is a great actress. Bella Heathcote might be more the, you know, there's your Mary Elizabeth Winstead. There's some pictures of her. There she is in 10 Cloverfield Lane right there. And
so she's the main actress.
The main actress in this, and she's good in it. She's a great actress.
Is this scary? That looks scary.
It's kind of scary. She's being held captive. I think that's a fake of Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I won't show you fake. Well, she's on a movie premiere, but you know what I mean. Like that's the girl you bring home to mom and dad, right? Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Bella Heathcote is the girl you fuck.
Right.
This is the girl you date, right? So there she is. I think she was in this movie too, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I never saw it, but. Mary Elizabeth Winstead's in that. Good movie. First-time director. What it is, here's the story of 10 Cloverfield Lane that's interesting. There was a guy that was supposed to make this named Damien Chazelle. It was going to be his first movie. He had worked on the script a little bit, and then he got funding for another movie he wanted to make that he had actually was the originator of. So he gave this up, and J.J. Abrams produced 10 Cloverfield Lane. So some other guy ended up directing it. But Damien Chazelle, he gave up this movie to direct his own movie, which was called Whiplash, which was my favorite movie, I think, of last year. Yeah, it was my favorite movie last year. So you ever get a chance to see Whiplash? Great movie. About the drummer in musical school. Oh, fucking great. J.K. Simmons was the instructor. Oh, so anyway, Damien Chazelle had his hands in this at one point, but 10 Cloverfield Lane is great. Sausage Party, that's what you need to see.
That's what I need
to
see.
Dude, Sausage Party is great. It's on now.
I know. Well, when it first came out, a couple of people I talked to that saw that like that kind of stupid shit.
Yeah,
so they
it's
weren't
funny.
Crazy about it.
You know what it is? It's like a Pixar movie, but it's dirty.
Right. I've seen
and it's got all the voices of those guys. Seth Rogen.
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader.
Is that out yet? Or is that
it's out on DVD now. Yeah, you can rent it.
So I should be able to find it on
online or something. Rent it. Yeah, Sausage Party's out. It came out last week.
Sausage Party.
You got to watch Sausage Party because it really is almost exactly like the Lego movie or something where it's like a bunch of characters. They all meet and they've got a... You know, they're trying to get out of it. What it is, it's a bunch of food items, and they want to get out of the supermarket.
Right, they realize that like they're
their food, and they're going to be eaten or something. I don't know. It's great. I saw it in the theater. I forget if I recommended it then or not, but here's the thing about Sausage Party. When I saw it in the theater, I just started that diet, and I was starving.
That's brutal.
And I went in, and I watched all this food talking to each other, and I was like, oh, fuck.
That's brutal.
Yeah, it was kind of brutal, but it's a funny movie, man. Those guys did a good job. Those same guys who made This Is the End.
I love that. I think the humor is kind of
this
so funny.
This is the
funny.
End, yeah. So you'll go love Sausage Party. And one final thing before we go. The Amanda Knox documentary I thought was... I loved documentary. If you want to know the real story of what happened in the Amanda Knox story, did she really kill that girl in Italy or not? I think you should watch the Amanda Knox documentary on Netflix. It's very well done. I believe that Amanda Knox is innocent. But boy, you watch it and you're not sure. You know, but the documentary's great. It's on Netflix. I know I wrote it down. I wanted to recommend that as well. Didn't have time to talk about it on a previous show or I hadn't been here. So we'll leave you with that. I think, Sam, what can I tell you? It was fun having you, dude.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This was
did you
cool
have fun
see,
doing this?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Seeing
man.
How I do it.
Cool to see how it goes down.
Being my wingman.
Of course.
Co-host.
Of course.
Good, man. So Sam is, again, Laughter is the Cure is his... His charity function. If you want to hire Sam to do one of those or you want to raise money, let Sam know.
All right. Check us out. Laughter's the Cure.
Yeah.
Google it. It comes up right away.
Check out his videos. And then, you know, he'll be at Comedy Castle next June doing his MC thing. He does a lot of the open mics and that kind of stuff, too. So Sam's in the Detroit scene. If you haven't met Sam, because I know like this girl, Miles, came to the show the other night.
Sat with us, yeah.
And she was there by herself, and, you know, like, she knew Nicole Schreiber, who was on that, Nicole, and she needed a place to sit, and I said, oh, well, I'll have you sit with Sam. You got a seat at you. And,
shared my nachos with her.
Yeah, okay, and I go, do you know Sam? And she goes, I don't know Sam. I said, you should know Sam. Sam's funny, and Miles is funny, so I said she'd be a good person to know.
Right, I didn't know that she was a comedian until last
year. Yeah, yeah.
I was talking to Nicole, and she's like, yeah, like my friend Miles is here, and then Miles came out. I was like,
yeah,
oh,
Miles,
my God.
Miles is a funny guy. I'll hopefully have Miles on here one day. Miles is cool, so. So you need to meet more comics, and maybe they'll listen to the show, and you'll know all them, and they'll know you a little bit, and, yeah, so I'm glad I could have you on here, man. It was a thrill, and, I'm very proud to know you. You're, boy, people are going to get mad if I say you're my best comedy student, but you're definitely one of the success stories of the advanced comedy class at this point.
I appreciate that for sure. Hopefully that just keeps growing. And
but you know, part of it, and I'm not taking all the credit because you work, dude. You work so hard at this, and you are constantly hustling and doing things, and that's really what comedy takes. You know, it's not a sprint; it's a marathon. We always say that it's a long haul. It's a long game. It's a long time to have a career. And you know, I mean, look, I got a podcast, I got this, I got that, I got to be in a Judd Apatow movie with fucking Kevin Hart, dude.
That's awesome.
I mean I got to be on the radio every week, I got to be on TV, I got, you know, I mean, a million things come from it if you stick to
you
it.
You gotta enjoy the ride,
enjoy it, man. You're gonna have your ups, your downs, you're gonna have your tough days, your bad days, your good days, and It's a hell of a ride, man.
No doubt. I appreciate you having me.
I got this house. I got everything out of that, man.
I appreciate everything.
You got to get. So, Sam, good luck with everything.
Thank you.
We love you. Thanks for listening to Joel Radio. Again, catch me on 9:10 a.m. every Tuesday. Like the Facebook for Joel Radio. I'm on there. Go to joelradio.net. We got shows going back to 2005. It'll be 12 years in March.
Just learning to walk.
2005, I got shows from. So listen to those. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening, everybody. Peace out.